Hi, I'm Ben Richardson, and you're listening to the Karate Podcast, where we talk about karate, the competitive sport of Kumite, and the warrior's journey. Brought to you in association with Kumite Coach, the world's first progressive online high-definition coaching platform, created by coaches and fighters for coaches, fighters, and students of karate. Join KumiteCoach.com today and take your karate to the next level. All right, guys, welcome to another episode of the Karate Podcast. I'm really excited today to have with me Kate Kawaczynski. Kate is one of the UK's top karate athletes. She is a fourth Dan black belt in Ishin Ryu. She is a multiple English and British champion in both Kumite and Kata disciplines. She's represented England at both the senior and junior level, her first cap being when she was just 14 years of age. She's three times European bronze medalist. She is a Karate One Premier League medalist, a Commonwealth champion in Kumite, and previously reached a high of 16 in the world rankings. She is also a three times British university champion. So Kate, welcome to the podcast and the show. It's fantastic to have you on today. It's been ages since we first started talking, and I know you're super busy, so I'm really pleased that you're on today. Thanks for coming.
No, thank you, Ben. It's brilliant to be here.
Awesome. So just as always, we'd like to get started with just finding out a little bit about how you found karate led you into training.
Yeah, so those that know me know that myself and my two brothers are all England internationals. So we all started way back, 5, 6 years old, when my primary school, a club opened at my primary school. So all three of us decided to give it a go. Never done a martial art before. We were all very, even at that young age, very kind of sporty and just loved extra activities and everything that the school used to provide. So gave it a go and just fell in love with it. So started at about 5, 6 years old, and within, I'd say, the year was up to training kind of like 2-3 times a week already, even at that young age. Almost became obsessed with it as a family. I didn't start competing for a couple of years after I started training, but still quite young. So I was kind of introduced to competitions from an early age. But it's very much kind of a family orientated sport for us. So my parents are also black belts. They started training a few years after the three of us, myself and my brother, started, but it also became like a family event. So all of us would go to training every evening, which was wonderful.
Yeah, fantastic. And in those early days, did you find that you preferred one part of karate to the other? You're quite unique in the fact that you're a champion in both kata and kumite, as we see more and more these days. You know, people specialize in one field. So what did you gravitate towards originally?
Kata, strangely, and I've ended up being a kumite specialist, but kata was my first love. We did everything at my club, so it was a traditional karate, so we did basics, we did kata, we did kumite. Myself and my brothers were really into team kata, so that's where we first started entering competitions as a team, the three of us, and we did that all the way up to when we had to stop, when they stopped allowing mixed teams, which was about 14-15, and I think we've all said if they allowed it internationally, we'd have continued and gone all the way, hopefully, and represented England. So that was where I started individual kata. I only competed at that for the first couple of years that I did competitions. And then my instructor said, Kate, why don't you try fighting? And it wasn't that I didn't want to do it. I just never thought of it, really. Right. And did my first competition. I don't think I did very well, but I loved it. Had a good old scrap. And from there, like the passion just grew, really. But I've always been an advocate that kata and kumite complement each other. I think every karateka should be training both. I know people might not necessarily enjoy both. They might say, you know, no, I don't want to do kata. I prefer fighting. I only want to fight. But I think they complement each other. And I think to be an all-round karateka, you really do need a certain level in both kata or basics and kumite. Because I think you see, even at that international level, the high level, you see what sets certain competitors apart is their basic level of technique, basic level of skill that you only get from that core, you know, karateka and training from those basic techniques. So I think they complement each other fantastically. And I've always enjoyed training both. But it just got to a certain point in my career where I decided that I was getting older, I was getting more tired, and I needed to concentrate my efforts into one discipline. So that's when I kind of went down the Kumite route.
Was there something particularly about Kumite that you enjoyed more in the competitive sense?
I think overall, in a harsh way, I was just better at it than kata. Right. And I think I trained harder at it almost because I enjoyed it more. And I think when I started to medal in Kumite, especially internationally, I kind of got the real bug for it. But I've represented England at both. My first junior medal in Kumite was when I was out representing England for individual Kumite and team kata. So right. I've always loved doing both. I think the decision was kind of taken out of my hands in terms of being a self-funded athlete and not having that support that potentially other countries have. You had to focus your efforts into one. I think if you want to try and excel at it, at the highest level, I think it was kind of taken out of my hands. I needed to spend the time improving my training on one discipline. So that's what I had to do. But I've always tried to keep up the training for both because, as I say, I think they complement each other really well.
Awesome. I've got three young girls myself, two of whom are getting into a little bit of karate now.
Oh, fantastic.
And I've interviewed a number of female athletes such as yourself. So I'm always interested to get your experience of the first time, not necessarily even competing, but fighting, getting hit. You know, that puts a lot of people off.
It does.
As well as. And so how do you cope with the impact of Kumite, and has it ever had a negative effect on your desire to succeed?
Yeah, I think especially as a young girl growing up, it's difficult to kind of get, I call it the switch into kind of the aggressive mode and then back. I think it's more natural for lads to have it. And some girls naturally have it, but some don't. And I definitely didn't. And I think my first, bigger competition was back in the day when we used to compete in Crystal Palace. And it was the nationals there. I remember being entered. I hadn't been fighting very long. And I think I got knocked pretty hard first round. The other girl nearly got disqualified, but she went through to the next round. She had like one warning left, I think, or something. And I came off the mat and I was crying to my coach at the time and saying, I don't want to go back on. Like, she hit me too hard and da, da, da. And you know, he chatted to me. I went back on, and I really think that was a breakthrough for me. So I went through however many rounds of repechage, 3-4 rounds, and managed to get the bronze medal. And I always remember walking off the mat and my coach saying, you know, where did that come from? Like, you just suddenly turned on this aggressive streak. And I think it is. I think it's about learning to. It's that confidence. And I always say to my students and to parents that come to my club, I just say I think the qualities that martial arts give, especially young girls, the confidence, the awareness, and just the skills that potentially you might need, hopefully not, but out in the real world. So I think there is that kind of aggressive nature that if a girl can have it and can switch it on. Competition fighting definitely does bring that out, and karate in general. So it's a fantastic skill, especially for girls and young females to be able to channel and to try and master.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree.
Yeah.
What was your driving motivation, do you think, behind your competitive career and interest?
I think being able to train alongside my brothers the whole time has always been kind of a fantastic thing for me, because we're all extremely competitive and we all kind of pushed each other. You know, if one person kind of fell off a little bit and thought, oh, I don't want to do this anymore, we kind of pushed each other to kind of excel. But I've always, ever since I started karate, had a real passion and almost obsession for it. From a young age, I didn't mind going to training and missing friends' birthdays or, you know, other things that kids might not like. I never minded training on my birthday, things like that. I always loved it. So I think some might say it was a kind of obsession, but I just call it a deep-rooted passion and just a love. And I think it just came from the enjoyment. And I've still got it now. And that's why I'm still competing. You know, I've got a career. I'm very, very busy, but I still love training. I find the time to train. I make sure that I'm still competing. And it's all from that enjoyment and the love of it. And I think I've done, I can't count how many competitions I've done where I've traveled internationally, spent so much money and got that first round. And sometimes people would just be like, well, I'm not doing this anymore. It's not worth it. And I always just pull back to the fact of why am I doing it? You know, I love this sport. I love this martial art. And I think if you can really think about why you're doing something, and if you've got a passion for it, then that's what is evidently going to just drive you on, even in the bad times.
Yeah. And I was just going to ask you, with regard to your schedule, like you mentioned to me that you're a lawyer, so that's obviously a proper job. It requires a lot of time, a lot of focus. How did you manage your karate career? Because you've been in it from a very young age. You've obviously gone through school, university, and then started a career. And you often hear saying, I don't have the time. Can you talk us through your experience of that part of your journey?
Yeah, I think from a young age, we've been a busy family. My parents sacrificed so much. We used to call it the bank of mum and dad and the taxi service of mum and dad. So we're musicians as well. So we had, you know, musical activities to go to after school. We had karate. We had sporting clubs. So from a young age, we were a very busy family. And I think I kind of just got into the routine of accepting that I was going to make time for things that I enjoyed. And from an early age, my parents sacrificing so much kind of instilled in us that was, you know, possible. So I'm eternally grateful for everything that they did when we were younger. And it just enabled me to kind of have a certain work ethic that I've now brought through through university, through school, and into my career now. And that's why I think I'm still able to focus and make the time to train. I mean, I love sleep, but I don't get much of it because I'm up early in the morning training. I'm late at night working if I have to, or I'll train after. I teach as well. Myself and my brothers also have our own club. So that's another element of time that's taken. So it's just, it's finding a balance. And I think it's not about not having time. I think it's about making time. And yes, there has been so many sacrifices over the years. Some of which I hold my hand up at the time. I think, you know, is this worth it? Am I going to regret this when I'm older? But I can wholeheartedly say I don't regret anything I've done in my karate career, and the time, the money, the effort that's gone into it, because of all the experiences that I wouldn't have had otherwise. So, yeah, I think it's finding that balance for you. Like I'm happy being busy. If I'm sitting down for half an hour at home, I get bored, you know? So I'm quite happy being tired, busy. I love it. And that's my lifestyle, but other people wouldn't like that. You know, they like the quieter life. So I think it's just, I've just got used to it. So I'm able to juggle a lot of balls and, you know, balance a lot of things, but it's tiring.
Yeah, that's impressive. In terms of your karate career, going back to that, at 14 you received your first cap, so that's a very young age to, you know, to be being capped for your country. Was that a big moment for you? Is it something you still look back on and hold as one of your best achievements?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that was the first time that they brought in the 14 to 15 category. So I was the first age group that could select at 14 years. Right. So I think it was Bisham Abbey. I think if I remember right, it was the selections. And I went for kata and kumite. And kata was first. And it was Sensei Tiki Donovan, who is my association instructor, head association. He was on the panel, I remember. And I went out and it was just one kata. You went out and performed one kata and then they selected the people. And in those days it was on the day, so everyone stood there, they all did their kata, they stood there and then they gave the result there and then, and you just had to deal with it. So I remember going for the kata selections. Obviously I really wanted it. I wasn't even thinking about the fighting at that moment. I was in kata mode, and I didn't get selected, and I just remember being absolutely crushed. I think I probably should have expected it, but you know, 14 years old, you want to win and get everything, don't you? So I remember sitting in the changing rooms and just being in absolute pieces, and Juliet Tony came in, and she was one of the England coaches at the time on the squad. She came in and she said, right, Kate, pull yourself together. You need to treat this as a completely different day, completely different selections. This hasn't happened. You now go in, you get that spot. And it will always stick with me. And I went in and just, I think we had a couple of fights, not many, and just annihilated and just fought the best I'd ever fought at that age, and got my first cap. And I didn't do very well. It was for a European Championships. I think the environment and the occasion got to me at the Championships. It was just almost too much for that age. I hadn't experienced anything like it. You know, a massive stadium, all the pressure, one fight. So I definitely didn't perform to my best at the Championships, but I'll never take away from the fact that I achieved that at such a young age. So, and I think going, having been selected that young and having all the experiences since, it's something that I can draw back on even now. It's nice to think back on.
Yeah, fantastic. It's interesting that you know, you had that experience so young. I'm always interested to see how people feel when they get to that next level of competition.
Mm.
And obviously, if you've been fighting on the sort of national EKF circuit and then you go abroad, it can be quite a different experience. And I presume something like a Premier One event is, you know, just can be quite intimidating just because the faces you see there. Was that something you experienced, or was it because you started young in that international scene that it had much of an effect on you?
Yeah, I think you get used to it and you get your coping mechanisms, and it's different for everyone. But I mean, I'm someone who struggles with nerves immensely, and I think I hide it quite well nowadays, but back then I definitely didn't. And it's just about experience, really. And as I say, drawing back, the older you get, the more mature you get with the preparation side of things. And I know it gets more serious. Like when I started competing at Premier Leagues, I've suddenly realised, wow, this is like people at the pinnacle of their sport and I'm here and I really want to win a medal. And it does hit you. And especially, I think, English international athletes are really up against it, especially in the last few years, where countries have become fully funded athletes, really, in the drive to the Olympics especially. And there was a core group of us 4 or 5 years ago that were doing, you know, every K1 that we could, and we were trying to really like aspire to that Olympic selections and that whole period. And as a completely self-funded athlete, it was immensely difficult. You know, you're exhausted by the time you get the step on that line at the competition. The money, the time, the energy that you've spent organising stuff for the competition, training for the competition, still working, trying to, the stress of having to get time off work, you know, the whole support that your families, your friends give you. It's a lot to kind of take on your shoulders, and you have to remind yourself why you're doing it. That everyone's proud of you no matter what the result is, and that's what, you know, as teammates we try and drill into each other all the time. But it's definitely hard to take the losses sometimes when you've put so much of and invested so much yourself into it. So that's definitely something that you learn to take and draw on in the good times.
You mentioned there that you struggle with nerves. I think a lot of people do. You know, there's that odd lucky person who just seems to thrive on competition.
No. And if they say they don't, they're definitely lying.
Are there any coping strategies or methods you found over the years that you could tell us about?
Yeah, so for me personally, I went through a stage where I was obsessed with the fact that I had to be very, very serious. And, you know, competition day meant I couldn't talk to anyone and I had to be in the zone. You know, everyone had been throwing these words around. And as I was younger, I was like, right, I've got to not talk to anyone, I've got to be very serious. Is it serious? I spent a lot of money on this competition. And it never worked for me. You know, sometimes it did, but I think it was more of a fluke than anything. I think over the years and the more experience I've got and the more international tournaments I've done and the more serious, you know, European Worlds, I've learned that personally, I have to be very, very relaxed. And I much prefer having a laugh, having a joke, treating it as just, you know, a normal, enjoying the experience, treating it as like a normal occasion, not thinking too much about being at a European Championships or World Championships. Obviously enjoying the experience, but not putting that massive negative pressure onto you. And it came down to something that I used to wear headphones in the warm-up room. And I was, listen to my music, you know, shut the world out and then I'll be ready to go on the mat. And it never worked for me. And the first time I took the headphones off, I left them at home. I think it was an international tournament. I didn't even bring any headphones with me, so I wasn't tempted. I went in, I soaked up the atmosphere. I went into the warm-up room. I was chatting. I got serious for a you know, a 2-minute set. And I was talking to my coach, I was talking to my teammates, and was just allowing myself to look around and to feel the experience and just be in the present moment. And when I went out, I was then able to channel and focus. And you know, some of the best performances I've done have been when I've been kind of more aware of my surroundings. So I've learned over time through experience that that works for me. But I know that other people very much need to have their time and to kind of zone out from everything else and almost be distracted. So I think it's very much finding what works for you. But as advice to young athletes, I would definitely say, please don't copy people just because you admire them, just because you look up to them. It might work for you. Definitely try it. But don't expect it to work. And if it doesn't, just try and find something that works for you, you know, because we're all different and we all deal with nerves differently. We're all thinking about different things. So it's definitely just through experience learning what works for you and then trying to stick to it.
Yeah, I think the pre-performance, you know, itself is so important. I know for me, I didn't compete anywhere near your level, but in my latter years, I discovered that when I relaxed, I was happy, I was excited about.
Yeah, absolutely.
My results were 10 times better.
Yeah. And there is definitely a fine line between being too relaxed.
Oh, yeah.
Because then you go out and you're not focused enough, you know. But I think there is definitely that level where, for me, it's kind of walking out into the stadium. Then I switch on in my warm-up when I'm doing certain sets. I will 100% switch on. The aggression will be there. The focus will be there. If someone came up to me, I would completely ignore them and would feel bad, you know. But at other times, I need to be relaxed. I need to be aware. So, you know, as I say, it's what works for you.
Yeah, absolutely. So you've obviously been in the England set for a long time. So I'm going to put you on the spot and ask you, who's the best coach?
Oh, gosh. I couldn't say because they've all been fantastic. I mean, I have been through a few and they've all been brilliant and I've drawn experiences and I've had wonderful advice from all of them. My first medal was under Wayne Otto, and he was a phenomenal coach, and we were the we really had a loss losing him, but I know the Norwegian team have flourished under his tutelage. So it's that was a big defining moment for me, having him as my coach out at my first Europeans, where I medalled. Willie Thomas, I medalled under him, and Paul Newby. Paul Newby was in my coach for my final European bronze medal. And just throughout the years, they've all brought something different to the team. And I think it's, in a way, it's been fantastic to have that different leadership. And as an athlete, for me, you know, I draw very much on my coaches, and they've all been fantastic in very different ways. So to draw experience from them as well, because they're all completely different athletes, completely different fighters, I think has only improved athletes like me, really, where we get to think outside the box and not just have kind of a streamlined version of what, you know, the way that people you know, having one coach would potentially have an effect. So
did you ever find any difficulty in like the transition from one coaching style to the next?
I think if we were fully funded professional athletes, potentially, yes. If we were spending all our time together and you 101% trusted this person and, you know, you couldn't think of having another coach and then suddenly it was a massive change up, I think in that situation, it definitely would. But I think the England setup at the moment, obviously, we see coaches once a month at squad training. You see them when you're out there and you make your relationship then. And each one of the coaches that I've had have been excellent at when it's needed and when the time has come, they've given over and above to making sure that you feel comfortable, that you feel ready for whichever tournament I've been at. So I've been very, very lucky with the coaches we've had in England. And I think, you know, it's an uphill battle now competing, especially the last few years, competing against these countries that are fully funded and have all the support and all the money to throw behind their athletes. And I don't envy our coaches with, you know, what they have to try and achieve and what they have to try and overcome. So,
yeah. It's a very British story, though, for sport, I think, you know. So,
it is.
But hey-ho. how have your goals or your focus changed over time with regards to your committee? Has it always been, I want to be a champion? Has it always just been, I want to get through the first match? Where does your focus lie as an athlete?
Yeah, I think when I was younger, it's very much I want to win all the time. Mentality. But I think as I've got older, that mentality has almost matured into I want to perform to my best each time. Yeah. And when I haven't, if there's external factors that have made that happen, or if I've just had a bad day, then I've learned to recover quickly. I think I hate losing. I think most competitors do, but it took me a while to realise that the longer you dwell on a loss, the longer it takes to then improve and get to that next level. So I think you have to be harsh on yourself, especially at elite level. You have to be harsh and say, today I was not good enough, or today this happened to make the situation hard for me to win. Or, you know, at the end of the day, you lose. There's a winner and there's a loser. And if you're the loser, then you lost for a reason. So I think it's about being mature in that aspect, and still having that passion and not going to any tournament to make up the numbers. You go to win. And I think especially as I've got older and had to invest more and more money into K1s and international tournaments, I've always been of the mentality, if I'm as prepared as I can be and I've done all of the hard work behind the scenes, then I can go out, I can enjoy myself and try and perform to my best. And that's all that I, you know, wish for. So I think taking that pressure off yourself is a massive thing, without losing the will to win. I think in the moment you have to be ruthless and you have to think, I need to win today, otherwise it's going to be the end of the world. But then you need to be kind to yourself afterwards. It's that fine balance, I think.
Yeah, that's really insightful. In terms of your inspiration, do you look to other athletes at all? Do you have any idols out there that you watch and think, I'm going to take that from them? Or is it just, you're just trying to create yourself as you go?
Yeah, I think it's dangerous to look too close to idolise too many people in specific ways. I think I idolise so many people for different reasons. Work ethic, what people have achieved under, you know, whatever circumstances they've been in. A huge inspiration to me have always been my family, because I've grown up with a certain work ethic. I've grown up with competing against my brothers and, you know, us all kind of trying to aspire to really huge goals. And they've always been a source of inspiration to me and always pushed me to achieve my best. And obviously, I wouldn't be where I am in my karate career without the money, the time, the effort that my parents also put in. So as cliche as it is, I think my family are definitely my biggest inspiration in terms of my karate career. And then there have definitely been, you know, coaches over the years, other athletes that have, you know, meant the world to me and have shaped who I've become as a karate athlete. And I think it's about, as I said, about the experience you bring all of that together. And I think that's as you mature and as you get older, you then just kind of reflect, and it makes it all worthwhile.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I'm just interested, as you were talking about your training there, do you split your training into conditioning, kumite specific, traditional? And if so, could you share that with us?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think it's important to not lose sight of the sport that we're doing. I think a lot of people don't do enough karate training, whether that be basics, whether that be, you know, specific to kumite, specific to kata. And I think there's definitely a push over the last few years with the importance of things like S&C, not only for specific goals within your sport, but also the whole side of injury prevention and things that I don't think people really thought about. And especially as self-funded athletes, I think so many people on the England squad, as they kind of did the transition from junior to senior, there's such a jump there. And I just don't think they kind of are thinking enough about the whole aspect of their training. So I think it's definitely important to have as much karate training in there as possible. So I try and balance my basic training, my kumite training, which involves, you know, sparring, specific drill work, reaction work, tactical training, which can mean, you know, quite a slow paced lesson. Sometimes in really, you know, intensive, like mentally training sessions, I don't sweat that much because it's all tactics, it's all thinking. But that's still training. You're training your mind, you're not training your body. I think S&C, as I said, is a massive thing. I discovered it at university, so I hadn't really done it before since then because I hadn't really had access to it. And I really started exploring, you know, what it could bring to the specific sport. But again, not many people have access to that kind of expertise to fully understand it. And then obviously I have all my running, my endurance, so HIIT sessions, running, going to the gym, doing all my cardio side. So there's definitely kind of like a massive element to training. When people say they're going training, you know, as you get older and more experienced, especially trying to compete with these elite level athletes, you understand how you have to spread your week. And, you know, as a full-time working person, I've had to really plan properly how I do that. And I think it's also important to incorporate rest days in as well, you know, just basic stretching, recovery, which I was never very good at as a young athlete. I thought that if I wasn't training 7 days a week, I'd fall behind and, you know, I would do well at the next competition. But as I've got older, I think that's important as well. And you can still, you know, watch videos, you can train yourself mentally while your body's resting. So I think it's about being clever, but also trying to access everything that the sport needs to be at that high level.
And do you have any nutritional philosophies or practices that you feel are important when you're an elite athlete?
Yeah, I mean, I've been lucky. I haven't really had to battle with kind of weight categories that much. When I was younger, I had to more. And I think, especially with athletes in England, I know I keep saying it, but being self-funded, you know, the support isn't able to be there. So yes. I think a lot of athletes have just been on their own. And the small group of us that started doing well and started doing consistent K1s quickly found that things like nutrition, S&C training were the difference between us and the fully funded athletes. And I think we were forced to take the time and to make the time to start to really think about things like that. You know, how much water are you drinking in a day? Are you getting enough veg in? Are you getting, you know, your balance of carbohydrates and sugars and everything that you don't even think about? You just think, oh, I'm just going to have, you know, a nice healthy meal tonight. And I don't know how much water I've drunk, but I just don't even need to think about that. And, you know, you get to training and you suddenly dehydrated and you think, oh, gosh, I haven't drunk any water today. And it's just things like that I think it sets you apart. And you need to be almost ruthless with your planning of it. And that's the only way that I found that I could get through. I've such a busy day that I had to really plan out exactly what I was doing. And then it kind of takes the pressure off you. But it's that preparation and that the time that it takes to do that not a lot of people can do. So, again, it's a lot of effort to kind of bring yourself to that level as an athlete, especially doing it on your own.
Yeah, and that's obviously, you know, resulted in you achieving some amazing successes in the competition circuit. Is it something that stands out of the medals, tournaments you've won that you hold on to?
Yeah, there are definitely a few. I think my first K1 medal, so I competed in my first Karate One tournament just as I was finishing my junior career. So I think it was 2013, I think. I had one more Europeans left, and this was in the kind of the November time, and I had one Europeans left the February following that, and I managed to medal, and Natalie Williams sat in my corner for the whole tournament. And it was kind of just a whirlwind of emotions. It was my first K1. I didn't know what to expect. I turned up, all of these famous athletes are there that I'd seen on, you know, all the social media, and I thought, oh my god, this is amazing, I'm just going to do my best. And just ended up medaling, and it was fantastic. And thinking back now, I don't think I truly realised what an accomplishment it was to medal at my first K1. It kind of was just in a whirlwind of emotions and at the time. And then the following February was my last under 21 Europeans, and I won my final bronze medal there with Paul Newby in my corner. So I think that kind of period of about 5 months was just incredible. And as I say, there were two bronze medals. So some people might not celebrate that. I think, well, why are you celebrating that? You know, it's not a gold medal. But both times I got knocked out and managed to fight back and come back from disappointment very, very quickly. And I think sometimes, you know, a bronze medal can mean much more because of what you have to overcome on the tournament day. So definitely those two. And I think the third one would be that the English National Championship's just gone, actually, because of COVID. You know, all of us were kind of in a limbo for a couple of years there. And I think coming back, I hadn't competed at all. Training had been extremely difficult to keep up, but I'd managed it. And, you know, I'd been doing different things. I went down a category because I'd been training and, you know, lost the weight naturally and thought, you know, it's a new category, it's a new start, why not? Something different. And I definitely had all those doubts. you know, am I still going to enjoy it after a couple of years out? I'm older now. You know, will the passion still be there? Will I be good enough? Will I even remember how to fight properly when I actually step on the tatami? You know, all of those, even as an experienced athlete, you have those worries, you know? Yeah. And I obviously won the title and just couldn't have enjoyed it more. So I think that will always stick with me as an achievement of overcoming how I was feeling and coming back to the tatami after such a long time and, you know, a global pandemic. So, yeah, definitely those three occasions.
Oh, wow, fantastic. And just what you said about the bronze medals, I remember I had a chap called Rick Young, who I've interviewed on the show, who was a multiple world champion in jiu-jitsu.
Oh, wow.
I remember him sitting in our dojo in a seminar saying to us that it wasn't the gold medals that he holds on to dearly, it's the bronze ones, because they
taught absolutely. Him. Yeah, I can only agree. Yeah. And I think I've lost in 3 K1 bronze finals, which hurt even more. So yeah, to lose that bronze medal is very painful. So
yeah.
When you win it, it definitely is. And I think with karate as well, I think with other sports you have time in between rounds. You know, sometimes they have days in between finals and things like that. It's so intense with karate. Like the weigh-in now for international tournaments is the day before, but European and world, sometimes still, it used to be when I was competing, you weigh in on the same day, you compete on the same day, everything's on the same day, and it's a lot to handle. And to sometimes come from, you know, you all want to win gold, and to come back from a crushing loss, you know, 10 minutes later, to have to step back on the tatami and to suddenly focus back and to, you know, get through another 2-3 rounds or however many rounds you've got to win another medal, I think is character building, but it's also an extreme achievement if you can get through and win that. So yeah, I could not agree more.
Absolutely. So Kate, what are your goals currently for your karate career?
So obviously I've just started my training contract actually, which is like the final qualifications for solicitors. So I've kind of done all my exams now, which I completed over COVID while training. So that was eventful and difficult, but I managed it. And now I'm kind of in my final episode of that. So I'm very much work focused at the moment, but I'm also loving being back into training after COVID. The English was a fantastic experience for me, and the Commonwealth Games at the end of last year. So I've definitely still got the competition bug. I'm very much back into it, but I'm a person who doesn't ever want to commit to something unless I can give my whole heart and soul. And I think now that I've kind of started my training contract and I'm into it and I'm comfortable, I'm going to be back competing with a vengeance, because I don't feel too old. I think I'm quite old, but I don't feel too old at the moment. So I think I've still got a few years in me, you know. And the passion's still there. I think if I'd have competed at the English and thought, I don't enjoy this anymore, I just want to do coaching, I just want to teach, I just want to do karate for the love of it, then, yeah, you know, I wouldn't have lost anything, because I've had years of experience and memories that karate, and especially sport karate, has brung me. But I'm definitely not finished yet. The passion's still there, and I'm training harder than ever. So I'll be looking to be back competing internationally very, very soon.
That's fantastic. Look forward to seeing you there. Kate, thanks so much for being on the show today. I really appreciate it, and really value your time. So thank you very much, and wish you all the best for the year to come.
Thanks, Ben. It's been brilliant. Thanks very much.
Absolute pleasure.